Hi, my name is Dr. Hillary Van Horn Gatlin at Kaiser Permanente, South Sacramento, and I am your moderator for tonight's house call. We're calling you live to present a special program about diabetes in the African American community. So if you're sitting at home and you have diabetes or you want to help someone who does, this is your time. Tonight, it's free to participate. You'll get to listen in, answer poll and quiz questions with your own phone, and even ask questions live on air to our experts. Now, prior to introducing our return wonderful guest this evening, I want to start by thanking the more than 120 people in your community who joined us in August and September for our group blood pressure visits. It was incredible to see so many of you on the phone in person partnering with us to take control of your health, your family's health, and your community's health. Now, joining us again this evening are Dr. Leon Williams and Dr. Kristen Gates, who have been partnering with us this year to look at how we as an organization and how you at home can close the gaps in health outcomes in the African American community. We also have a new guest. So I'd like to introduce everyone to Dr. Albert Mock, one of our clinical pharmacists who specializes in our topic for the evening, diabetes. As many of you know, having joined us throughout this year, we have talked about the fact that African Americans are at a higher risk for heart disease, stroke, and colorectal cancer. And tonight, we're going to talk about diabetes, where African Americans are 80% more likely than non-Hispanic whites to be affected.
So Hillary, you're exactly right about that statistic. I mean, part of the issue when we say numbers like that is that it can be really shocking, and the question often ends up being why. And the way that number was actually gathered is that 18.7% of all African Americans either have a diagnosis of confirmed diabetes or they're currently have diabetes, but it's been undiagnosed. That's the way in which they got that statistical data. The bigger reason why we're so concerned about this is because of the extreme complications of diabetes, which can be loss of limbs and even loss of life.
So what I'm hearing with diabetes is it's not just the disease itself, but the problems that come with diabetes that are so scary and for some reason, you know, really affect the African American community more. Is that what I'm understanding?
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that often comes up is sometimes I'll have patients in the office who have not a clear understanding of exactly what diabetes even is.
So first, I think it's important for us to kind of explain to you guys what diabetes is. Maybe you have it, or maybe you care for someone who does have it and want to help them. Diabetes is a condition where you have high levels of sugar in your blood. Normally, an organ in the body called the pancreas makes a hormone called insulin that helps bring down your sugar in your blood. But in diabetes, the insulin that your body makes doesn't work well. This leads to high levels of sugar in the blood, and those high levels can damage your body as years go on.
That's exactly right. And even as these high levels of blood sugar continue, it starts to put us at risk for heart attacks, stroke, kidney problems, eye damage that can even lead to blindness. And often one of the key symptoms that we often talk about is nerve damage. We often see that as well. Not only do you see the effects of what the sugar in the bloodstream can do to an individual, but you also see higher risk for cancer. And that's the reason why you get statistics that people with diabetes often live 6 to 8 years less than those without it.
You said 6 to 8 years less?
Exactly.
And as we said, for African Americans specifically, we know we are 2 times more likely to die from the disease and its complications.
You know, I think this is also scary to hear, and I know for a lot of my patients, there's this sense of this is also scary, it's so overwhelming, I don't know what to do about it, I don't know how to do anything about it. And what you're telling me is that, you know, it's even more damaging, it's more detrimental, and it's more deadly in the African American community. So how do we turn that information from something that creates fear or avoidance and me not wanting to go and hear about it or think about it, or, you know, if you're a spouse on the phone and have a spouse who actually has diabetes who's pretending not to listen right now, into an action that we can take today?
Well, you know, we've heard this loud and clear also with our hypertension talks is that people are really interested in how to live healthy. And I think that's one of the things that we really have a unique position here at Kaiser Permanente is because we have a lot of resources in how to focus on health rather than just disease management. In fact, we rank in the top 10% in the entire nation across all ethnic groups in diabetes care, blood pressure control, preventing heart attacks, and cancer prevention. And tonight, I think we really do want to focus not just on the disease itself, but ways that we can take small steps toward lowering risk and keeping our heart, our eyes, our limbs, our kidneys functioning and healthy.
And, you know, it's incredible. Even as we've been talking about this, we still have had hundreds of people joining the call. So for those of you who are just joining the call, thank you for being here, for taking this time, not just for yourself, but for the people in your family, in your household, in your community who are really struggling with this. Because, I mean, from what I'm hearing, this is huge. It feels like an epidemic. And so, you know, African Americans, as you said, really face some unique challenges. And for those of you on the phone, and we've got almost 800 people right now, I want to ask you to do a poll. I want you to give us some feedback. So for everybody on the phone right now, what is the biggest challenge when it comes to managing your diabetes if you have it, or if you have a loved one or know somebody who has diabetes, what is the biggest challenge? So I want you to press 1 if it's diet and exercise are too hard to change. 2, if you're not sure how to understand and read nutrition facts, those labels are very confusing. 3, not being able to see your doctor when you need to. 4, fear or feeling overwhelmed with managing your blood sugars. And 5, the cost of medical care and prescriptions. So again, 1, diet and exercise too hard. 2, not being able to read those nutrition facts. 3, not being able to get in to see your doctor. 4, feeling fear or just being overwhelmed with managing those blood sugars. And 5, the cost of care. So, all right, we're gonna reverse the script a little bit. Dr. Mock, Dr. Gates, Dr. Williams, what do you think people's overriding answer is? We have, let's see here, almost 200 people answering right now. What's your guess?
I'm going to say diet and exercise.
I would say diet and exercise.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen on the phone, I swear to you, they cannot see the answer. So 62% of people, you're right, said diet and exercise are too hard to change. And is that really that big a part of diabetes management?
It actually is. There's actually a book out there, because a lot of people say that they don't know what type of diet to go by. There's a book out there by 2 African-American registered dietitians called the New Soul Food Cookbook. It's actually made for diabetic recipes for our African-American community. So that's something that you can actually pick up at our health education store.
Wow, so just here at Kaiser.
Just at Kaiser.
Okay.
The health education store you can get.
And it's called the New Soul Food Cookbook.
The New Soul Food Cookbook, and I believe that they're on the 3rd edition at this point.
Wow, okay. What else?
Kaiser also has some nutritional classes available for free. You can also text 45356, that's 45356, with the word diabetes, and information will be sent directly to you. Consider emailing your doctor. We've got access all the time. Ask about any after-hour options. If transportation is an issue, you can always schedule a telephone appointment or a video visit. That may be right for you. Our goal basically is to work with you to manage your health in any way we possibly can. If you're saying that fear and being overwhelmed with diabetes is an issue, that's a common fact that patients always bring up, and that's really concerning.
Yeah, and I was going to say that was actually the second most reported thing on this poll was that fear or just being overwhelmed.
Whether it's you or someone that you're loving, that you're trying to support, the act of just coming in and getting your blood work done is a great place to start. Information can be power. And if you're willing to work with us and trust the process, we will get your blood sugar under control over time.
Now, what about the cost issue? What about the financial piece of it?
If that's an issue for you, I would really recommend that you contact your doc. Because there are financial assistance programs out there for patients.
Interesting. Okay. So before we get to another question, I know some of you are so used to this process that we've already got you guys asking questions. But for those of you who haven't been part of this group before, press 0 to speak to our operators, who are actually people that work here at Kaiser, so we can get you on the air to ask your question. Again, so you're going to press 0 if you want to ask a question on the air. So, you know, let's talk about another poll. So diabetes takes work. And what I'm hearing is it's the diet, it's the exercise, it's the food that we're consuming, it's going to the doctor, it's getting your blood work done. I really want to talk about what else gets in the way. I mean, for those of you on the phone, what is your story? So press 1 if you really don't understand what diabetes is. 2, if you know so many people or you're related to so many people that have it that it seems impossible to be able to fix. Press 3 if you just don't like testing your blood sugar. That's one I get my patients saying a lot. And 4, I'm afraid of medication side effects. So again, tell us your story. 1, if you don't really understand what it is. 2, if you just know so many people that it feels like any amount of effort is meaningless. 3, if you don't like testing your blood sugar. And 4, if you're afraid of medication side effects. So I'm going to ask you docs again, what do you think the answer is? So Dr. Mock, I'm going to let you guess first this time.
Great question. I'm going to go with the first one. I don't really understand what diabetes is.
Okay. Dr. Gates, what's your guess?
I'm going to go with I'm afraid of medication side effects.
All right. Dr. Williams, what do you think?
I'm going to go with 2. I know so many people related to me, and it seems impossible not
well
to get
it. Well done, Dr. Williams. Almost 40% of the people on the phone. We had an incredible turnout for this one. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for really telling us what's on your mind. So you're right, Dr. Williams. Almost 40% said, I know so many people, I'm related to so many people that have this disease that it just feels like I can't do it. So what do you think of that?
You know, part of the issue or the thing that's interesting is that so much of how we live and how we eat is such a shared experience. You know, sometimes there are things that look like it could be genetic when it's really just this transfer of similar practices. So meaning that we often make meals the way that our mother and our grandmothers made them. And so some of the health problems that they may have had having those foods, we might also see. So I think just kind of speaking to the heart of that fear, I think that there are some things that seem unavoidable that we probably really could change if we did carbohydrate restrictions. So carbohydrates we often think of as breads, sugars, a lot
stuff.
Of the desserts.
The
exactly.
Good stuff is what you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. The
really
stuff that tends to make you crash or what we call the itis is how we refer to it. So those kinds of foods are usually a big deal. But, you know, they also cause weight gain, and it's that weight gain that puts people at greater risk for diabetes. So those factors are things that we truly have power over, and we don't have to be trapped into the fear of that, you know. But there are also other things that we can do if we do have the disease, you know. So simply having the diagnosis of diabetes doesn't mean that we're powerless either. You know, we can check blood sugars before meals. We can be interactive with our physicians. We can know what our hemoglobin A1C is. I mean, the
hemoglobin A1C?
Exactly. So that's that number that we usually check every 3 months.
How do you check that?
So that's usually done with blood work. So
okay.
That's the thing that your doctor will annoy you about if they see that it's gone too long without you checking it.
Got it.
And the great thing about that is that unlike just getting a simple blood sugar or glucose test or what people do on their monitors, the hemoglobin A1C test tells me what someone's sugar has been on average for 3 months. So it gives me a more long-term opinion about or perspective about what's been going on with their blood sugars.
Okay. And then once you have diabetes, do you have it forever?
Also a great question. So with lifestyle changes, is it
possible? Again, lifestyle, you're talking about the diet, the exercise, the weight loss.
Exactly. You're hitting it on the head. It's possible for some people to get off of their medications and no longer carry the diagnosis of diabetes, meaning that their blood sugars are under control off medication.
And when you say blood sugars, you're talking about like that A1C number is better?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so we use having it less than 6.5 as kind of our standard. So is that possible? Yes. Now, there are some people who, because of genetic predispositions, actually their pancreas just doesn't make a lot of insulin. And those are usually your type 1 diabetics. So we really are talking about type 2 diabetics.
Mm.
People who develop diabetes later on in life, often due to the changes or the choices that they've made. So for those people in particular, it's often possible to try and get someone off medication or at least on less. But for someone who's a type 1 diabetic, that really is a genetic issue with their pancreas to where they're not making insulin.
Right.
It would be very dangerous for that person to come off of medication.
Got it. So one of the things you talked about with type 2 diabetes is that the pancreas itself the insulin's not doing what it's supposed to. And so when we do the diet, when we do the exercise, when we're doing all of those different parts of it, then it helps our pancreas.
You got it.
Okay.
Exactly. The exercise in particular,
mm-hmm.
And it can reduce I'll put it this way. It can make your body's insulin work better even without losing a pound.
Mm-hmm.
The exercise is really critical.
Okay. Now, one of the other things that came up is, you know, we were talking about medications. What are some of those common medications?
Some of those common medications would be like a metformin or a glipizide, and sometimes if we cannot control you with those two oral medications, and sometimes we add some other oral medications, then we will add insulin.
Okay, and insulin, is that oral?
No, that's an injection.
A shot.
It's a shot.
Injection's a fancy word for a
shot.
Shot.
Okay, yes.
All right. So what about insulin? I know so many people that are afraid of taking insulin. You know, Dr. Mock, I know this is your jam, so tell me about it.
Yes. So as mentioned earlier, insulin is actually very powerful tool that we can use to manage those blood sugars. Oftentimes we'll use it, as Dr. Williams mentioned, if we maybe can't control your sugars on some of the oral medications, or if when you're first diagnosed, your sugars are really, really high, insulin is a really effective tool that we can use to bring your sugars down very quickly. Now, I know it sounds scary. It's an injectable medication, and it can be really frightening to do that. But I like to tell people, too, this is probably one of the most natural medications.
Because your pancreas makes it, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. It's one of the most natural medications you can use. Also, when people think of injecting the insulin, they think of a big needle, like if you're getting a flu shot or
that's what I have in my mind right now.
Exactly,
yeah.
Or a tetanus shot, right? Those needles are designed to go a lot deeper, you know, into the muscle. These needles are not designed to go that long. So people who need to start it are often very surprised to find that injecting the insulin is relatively painless.
Okay. And if you're on insulin, are you also taking those medications you were talking about, like the glipizide, the metformin, these other medications by mouth?
A great question. And absolutely, in many cases, we will have you on both, especially the metformin, as the metformin, one of its functions is to help your body respond better to insulin. So sometimes they work really well together. Glipizide is one of those ones where it just depends on the situation. Oftentimes, if you're on a mealtime type insulin, we will stop the glipizide. But if you're just on a more longer acting insulin once or twice a day, we may keep you on the glipizide. It just depends.
So this sounds, from what I'm hearing from all of you, that this is not a one-size-fits-all approach. You're really tailoring it to every single person that's on the phone and making that very specific to their needs based on the medications and how and the when of it. And so it sounds like it's kind of complicated. So Dr. Mock, my understanding is that you're part of a team of specialists who work with these primary care doctors like Dr. Gates, Dr. Williams, and you're a specialty pharmacist. So that means that once they're actually diagnosed with diabetes, until the age of 75, you're really working with them. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
So I have to ask those of you listening on the phone right now who this applies to, or again, that spouse is pretending not to listen, and we all know you're listening too. Do you know about the At-Goal team? So the At-Goal team is a team that Dr. Mock works with. So press 1 if you're actively working with an At-Goal diabetes specialty pharmacist, if you have diabetes, and 2, if you didn't even know this department existed and you'd like to know more. So 1, again, if you know it, you're working with them, you love them, they're changing your lives, and 2, if you didn't know and you'd like to know more. Oh, interesting. 70% of the people on the call that answered said they'd like to know more.
Oh, well.
And that is a really exciting opportunity for us. So well done, Dr. Mock. I think that you just made some business for yourself. So tell us more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a team of clinical pharmacists, and I'm on that team. And we work with your primary care physicians to be basically your personal diabetes care pharmacist.
Personal?
Yeah, personal.
So this is just like a one-on-one thing?
Exactly. So we will call our patients, depending on how well you're doing, every 2 to 4 weeks or so to check in on those blood sugars. We help make sure you're up to date on all your A1Cs. We follow up on those results as well. We can also help help with your medication adjustments if we need to, ordering new medications, things of that nature.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting. So it sounds like you guys do a lot of work. That is really incredible. Okay, so how would they get an appointment with you?
So if you'd like to get involved with us, you can talk to your primary care doctor. They can send a referral over to our program. And you could also call our program directly as well.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So it sounds like, Dr. Williams, Dr. Gates, you guys are the people who are really setting your patients up with Dr. Mock and his colleagues to really create some incredibly personalized care around diabetes management. Again, because it does not sound as easy as just making a little bit of change.
Personalized care to set you up for success is how we look at it.
Success, yes, that is a big one. Okay, so now I have another question about medications in general, including insulin. For those of you listening at home, are any of the following beliefs those that you hold, or maybe you know somebody who believes this, about why your doctor is recommending a medication? Press 1 if you know somebody or you personally believe that the drug company gives money or kickbacks for prescribing medications. Press 2 if you feel that Dr. Gates and Dr. Williams are trying to get you out of their office quickly. Press 3 if you feel like your doctor doesn't believe in natural remedies. Or 4 if you feel like your doctor has your best interest at heart and you feel like that you really can trust their recommendations. And I know this is a really personal question, but in terms of us driving change, both in the exam room and in the community, this is a hard question that we really need your feedback on. So I'm going to say it one more time. 1, if there's a fear that the drug company might be giving, Kaiser or their physicians kickbacks. 2, if you think that you're just kind of being rushed and you're not really being heard. 3, if you feel like your physician doesn't believe in natural remedies. And 4, if you feel like, no, they're really trying their best. So you guys have been pretty kind. So we have about almost a 50-50 split. Most people think that you guys have their best interest at heart. Well done. But there are 30% of people on this call who say that there is some concern that drug companies are giving money, kickbacks, and then almost 20% who said that there's a sense that, you know, those natural remedies are kind of being ignored. Can you tell us a little bit about this? Because these are really sensitive and concerning challenges. I know a lot of people, you know, it's hard to trust when there's a sense that maybe there's more in it than just their own health and well-being.
Actually, this is a fair question that I commonly hear in the community.
Do you really?
I do. As a doctor prescribing this, I really want patients to know, those who actually have diabetes and those who are on the call, that we use established interventions that are not only effective but also cost-effective. It's more cost-effective, and I want you guys to understand this, it's more cost-effective for you and us as health providers to help you prevent some of these more serious diabetes side effects through medication, diet, and exercise than the longer-term consequences from the actual disease of diabetes.
So what I'm hearing is that the companies of metformin, glipizide, they're not...
They pay me nothing.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that it's mutually beneficial to really just make sure that we're managing the condition itself and trying to get rid of it altogether.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. So some of our listeners may know that diabetes can damage eyes. What should they do about this? I mean, that was one of the big ones that I was thinking about. You said it can lead to blindness.
Exactly. So one of the key things that we try and monitor is not just blood pressure, it's not just blood sugar levels when it comes to diabetes, but we also want to make sure that we're not possibly missing damage that could be going on with the eyes. And so we really believe that you should see your eye doctor every year. And this is really to screen to make sure that there is no diabetic eye damage that's happening. And we actually do a quick photo every 2 years.
So if you want to do this and you're thinking, okay, maybe I need this or maybe my doctor's been talking about it and now that I'm listening to it, it sounds reasonable, is there a major cost associated with getting this eye screen done?
No, so we actually will do this and often we'll book you the same time that we see you in the office. So if you're seeing any one of us in primary care, that's something that we can make sure that happens.
So you're not getting a kickback for the eye screen either?
Not at all.
Okay. So if you want to do that or find out if you're due, what should you do?
So for this, they actually can press 7 now, and this way they can find out right at this moment whether or not they're due for that screening, and if they are, we'll actually take care of it tonight and just schedule them right now.
Okay, excellent. Now, we're about to go to the question and answer section of tonight. So again, press 0 if you have a question you want to ask live. But briefly, as we get ready, I want to talk about last month because we had an incredible turnout of 126 people who listened in on these calls, who were part of the community, who came in, met and supported Dr. Gates, Dr. Williams, and the African-American community around blood pressure control. In fact, it was so successful that we want to do the same for diabetes, and we really want to talk about blood pressure again, because my understanding is blood pressure, diabetes, there's a lot of parts of it that kind of go together. Is that correct?
It usually go hand in hand.
Okay. So if you're interested in joining us again on October 1st, Dr. Gates and Dr. Williams and Dr. Mock, are you in too? Excellent. Okay, he's nodding. You don't even know what he said yes to. So October 1st from 5:30 to 7:30 at South Sacramento, we're going to have another group visit around hypertension. We're going to be really looking at blood pressure again. And so if you want to do that, also press 7 now, and we will contact you with more information. So again, press 7. Be part of the movement. Be part of this. Come join us. Let's talk about this some more. And thinking about how effective hypertension has been, we also want some feedback as to whether you think that it would be helpful to have another group visit just around African-American diabetes, the issues, the challenges, and how we can overcome it as a group. So again, if you'd be interested in attending our hypertension visit, October 1st from 5:30 to 7:30, and introducing yourself to Dr. Mock, go ahead and press 7. And if you want to give us some feedback as to whether you think a useful tool would be having a similar African-American diabetes group visit, press 1 for yes and 2 for no. So again, 1 for yes, 2 for no. And this, again, just helps us figure out what you need, how we meet the need, and how we really look at how to close these gaps, because it is one person at a time. So let's take some questions. So looking at this, I think we've got some really interesting questions that I think kind of go to the point. And so, Sherry, would you be willing to ask your question to our physicians? Sherry, can you hear us? Okay, so I'm going to ask the question. You can let us know what you think. So she wants to know, what are symptoms of diabetes? How do you even know if it's an issue?
So some symptoms that patients may have may be increased thirst, increased urination, some blurry vision, some weight loss, just not feeling really good. Those are the most common, I would say, symptoms that patients have when they're first horribly diagnosed with diabetes. Because sometimes you may not have any symptoms at all. So that's the biggest thing.
So if you don't have symptoms, how would you even know?
When we check your yearly labs.
So, but if you're saying yearly labs, I think what you're also saying then is that you need to come in yearly?
Yes.
Okay.
So, your preventative screenings.
So you're telling us don't avoid you.
Don't avoid the preventative screenings.
Please. Okay. All right. Fair. Now, here's a question from Eileen. Eileen, would you be willing to ask your question?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. It's a good one. We would love to hear it.
Oh, what are some of the meals that you can cook if you don't have the money to buy that cookbook at home if you have diabetes?
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some other options without some of the costs that can be incurred from that?
So one of the things that we had mentioned earlier was the fact that we do have free nutrition classes here at Kaiser. Transparently, for myself, Dr. Williams, we know a lot more in regards to some of the side effects of the medication than some of the strategies in regards to doing diet changes. But that's the reason why we work as a team in Kaiser. Not one of us is supposed to have all of the answers. We really can work together. So we definitely have those resources available, and our nutritionists would really be the best people to answer it.
Okay, thank you. Now, we have a question from Eric, but Eric, this might actually be your wife based on what I'm seeing on the screen. Do you want to go ahead and ask?
Sure. Hi. Thank you all for doing this. I really appreciate it. My husband newly became I believe, type 2 diabetic, where you take the pills. Well, he's been doing excellent. He's dropped like 35 pounds. And so my question is this. Is there ever a time that he will be off? Can the pills be taken away and he's no longer classified as a diabetic?
Okay. Good question. This is something we were talking about. What is the answer to this? I mean, and by the way, congratulations to you, Eric.
So, yes, it is possible for him to come off his medication. Like you said, he dropped some weight. So if his hemoglobin A1C number comes down to, like Dr. Gates said earlier, in the normal range, then what happens usually is the patient should have a discussion with the physician should have a discussion with the patient, with the trial of actually trying to come off the medication and see if we can control the diabetes with lifestyle modifications. Because our real goal is to try not to have patients on medication. We don't like putting patients on medication, but if you necessarily need to be on medications, then we will put you on there. So, yes, that's a possibility.
The only thing I would add to what Dr. Williams said is just sometimes we will still put in the chart that someone has a diagnosis of diabetes, even if they're doing great. We actually call it a diet control diabetic. And that's actually more so for us as physicians not to forget to be checking in and to not lose sight of it. Sometimes I'll get patients who are very frustrated because they're like, Dr. Gates, I did amazing. Why is this diagnosis still on my chart?
Exactly.
But it's really truthfully more for us. If we tell you that you're doing amazing, that you're off of medications, that you no longer meet criteria as a diabetic, that is more so that the system itself doesn't forget to check in with you frequently.
Right, exactly. So you just want to make sure that you're just being extra thoughtful.
Exactly.
And that's why you leave it. Okay.
Because if people can get off the medications, unfortunately, they can gain the weight back, and then we need to make sure we're checking in.
All right. Now, Rodney's got a great question that I think a lot of people are going to share on this call. Rodney, would you be willing to ask your question?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can.
Well, I had just kind of a comment and a question. My grandmother and mother were diabetics. I am not a diabetic, but I know it runs in my family. So I'm almost middle-aged now, so I haven't had any issues with it. But I do have some family members who are. So I'm wondering if you have someone who still likes to eat a lot of sweets, cookies, cake, pies, and drink alcohol or whatever, is it possible if you maintain a very active lifestyle, can you keep it at bay that way, or do you think, like, I guess medicine is probably the only way to keep it under control?
Oh, interesting. Okay, so if I'm understanding this correctly, what he's really asking is if we can keep it going with the exercise piece and we still want, you know, the occasional candy or maybe a little bit more than occasional based on what Rodney's saying, are we doomed to diabetes? Do we have to go on medication to manage it? If we do it with just exercise?
You know, sometimes I tell my patients, you know, I'll try and paint a picture and doing just part of this would be like standing at the front door so that you're armed and ready in case someone comes in as an armed burglar rather than locking the door. So I guess the point that I would make is partially healthy is still at risk. So if you know and you can tell us on the phone, like, Dr. Gates, Dr. Williams, Dr. Mock, I am doing X, Y, and Z that aren't healthy, eventually it'll show up somewhere. And even if it's not diabetes, sometimes we'll see it with high blood pressure or high cholesterol. So the question is somewhat complicated. Does exercise serve as a protection to developing diabetes? Without question. But you wouldn't leave yourself at that kind of risk.
Got it. Okay. So I've got another question I think was fabulous. And I think, Dr. Mock, I'm wondering if this is better answered by you. So this is Godwin. Godwin, can you hear us?
Yes.
All right, let's hear the question. You got a good one. Let's hear it.
Yeah, the question was to summarize it in terms of side effects, okay, because I'm taking metformin for many years now, and I'm reading on the internet lactic acidosis side effects build up in the body, and also other
that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, so how? But I'm so far I've been improving taking metformin and exercising and diet, but what are the risks involved here?
And this is a common thing that we hear is the fear of the side effects, because anytime you pick anything up, it's like 20 pages of risks. So, I mean, Dr. Mock, what would you say? It doesn't sound like he's having any side effects. And he said it sounds like he's getting it, things are getting better. But tell us, what do you say to your patients in a situation like this?
Excellent question. I would say, first off, with metformin is one of the older, more well-understood medications in terms of oral pills for treating type 2 diabetes. And what we do is we kind of look at the individual patient. Those side effects that they're listing out on the inserts or online are oftentimes, if it even happened in one person out of thousands and thousands and thousands. So just because they list it as a side effect doesn't mean it's going to happen to you. And in some cases, it even happened in a really small percentage of patients. So if you're tolerating the medication well.
And when you say tolerating, you mean just not having problems?
Not having side effects. Yep, exactly. Not having any side effects. You feel like your diabetes is doing better on it. You're doing well on it. Then we would want to keep you on it. And if you at any point notice anything unusual, anything out of the ordinary, any changes, let us know, either your pharmacist or your primary care doctor, and we would be happy to, you know, to reassess.
Okay. And is metformin like the only medication? It sounds like maybe there's other medications too.
Exactly. So oftentimes if you are unable to tolerate, you're having a side effect, you're feeling bad on one medication, we do have alternatives. And so oftentimes we may try another one like glipizide or
got
a
it.
Different class of medication.
Okay. So I got one last really good question from Yoni here. Would you be willing to ask your question?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Yes. My question is, I was put on metformin 500 milligrams twice a day, and I would check my blood sugar in the mornings. It has now been changed to the slow-release metformin once a day, which I take at with my evening meal. My question is it preferable for me to do my blood sugar just prior to taking it in the evenings, or should I continue to take my blood sugar in the morning?
Yeah, and I think that this is a really good question from two parts. Part of it's just and the other piece of it being like, when is there a magic time to take your blood to test your blood sugar?
Another excellent question. I'll take this one. Oftentimes when you're on just one oral medication or oral medications only, we typically will have you just test those sugars first thing in the morning. Fasting.
First thing in the morning. When
yes.
you say first thing in the morning, you like just wake up and poke yourself?
Exactly.
Okay.
Before you've had anything to eat. In the morning, you fasted all night, unless your schedule is different. But in general, first thing in the morning before you've had anything to eat. You're on the extended release formulation, so that means it's lasting throughout the whole day anyway. But that fasting number is really what we're looking at first to determine how things are going. If we find that those are looking good and maybe your blood work, that A1C, that average sugar test, is out of range, we may have you...
When you say out of range, you mean still too high?
Still too high. We may have you test a second time or a third time of day, but in general, we will have you test that one time a day unless otherwise instructed.
And if you're working with you or one of your colleagues, these clinical pharmacist specialists around diabetes, you'll be telling them how many times to check their blood sugar and making it really specific to their schedule?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. We work with you.
Okay. And for those of you listening, before you hang up and call your doctor right away, I know she talked about the metformin versus the extended release metformin. Just briefly, should everybody be on extended release metformin? I'm wondering if other people are like, wait a minute.
No, not necessarily. If you're on the immediate release and you're tolerating it fine.
Again, not having the side effects.
Not having the side effects.
Okay.
We will keep you on it. We usually will put people on the extended release if maybe they had trouble or had a side effect on the metformin.
Excellent.
The
okay.
immediate release.
All right. That helped me. Thank you, Dr. Mock. So I don't want to just thank Dr. Mock. I want to thank Dr. Gates, Dr. Williams, for the incredible work that you have done here within Kaiser, the change that you're creating at this medical center, the change that you're creating within me. And I want to thank the community for being part of this call. You know, Kaiser Permanente has reduced heart attacks by 48% and strokes 55% over the past 15 years. Our patients are living longer lives and healthier lives, but we still know that we haven't done enough for our African-American patients, and we need to change that. So we're here for you. We want to help you meet these goals. If you want to work with that clinical pharmacist, if you want to come and join us in a group visit, press 7. Come join us. So again, thank you, Dr. Williams, Dr. Mock, Dr. Gates. And remember, if you've got questions we didn't ask to answer tonight, you can follow up with your primary care anytime. You can get more information on kp.org. This house call and every other one are available on our website on the Health Resources homepage. And for other non-personal questions, you can even call Health Education at 916-544-6220. Thank you for joining us, for staying on the phone, for being well, for putting your family first, and for sticking with us as we figure out what this means for your community and our organization as a whole.
Thank you all for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't forget about the group sessions that we're going to be having.
October 1st. We're going to be there late. All right. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.